with Wooey Jacobs. And this is your listener-sponsored community radio station, WBAI New York, and WBAI.org online. Now, I have been saying this for pretty much most of the week, and I'm going to continue on saying this. So, as you know, by this point, there has been a phenomenon going on around the globe called Clap. We clap because we care, and it's a simple gesture, okay, of going out towards your windows and start clapping outside to show your appreciation to all the essential workers out there that is trying to hold things down and trying to create and maintain some type of normalcy, whatever normalcy is these days. But they're putting their health on the lines, and which includes the medical workers, the service workers out there. That includes the firefighters, as also the police as well, too, as well as the delivery people and the supermarket staff that are there, too. The grocery staff as well, too. The delivery drivers, they are all considered essential, as well as media folks like me. But I just wanted to make it clear, it's not just about me, as Bernie has said one time before. It's not me, us. And this is an opportunity to show your appreciation to all the people out there who is trying to maintain some type of normalcy during these tumultuous times, as well as during this time of social distancing, to connect you, to connect yourselves with the rest of the community out there to show that we are in this together. So I guess I'm going to start it off by saying, why don't you go out to your windows and start doing the clap? And oh, now, we're supposed to be doing this for about 2 minutes, but that means 2 minutes into the 7 p.m. hour, and I can't do that because I don't want to take anyone else's time, and especially the time of the people who are about to go on the air right now, which happens to be the fine folks from Off the Hook. And they're about to start their show right about now. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Make sure you go out those windows right now and start showing appreciation to all those essential workers who are doing their thing. You could clap right about now. Keep on clapping as the next show comes up. Here we go.
And you are listening to WBAI from a remote location. It's just about 7 o'clock. Time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Completely bomb for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. Completely
bow.
And you're listening to Off the Hook as we scramble to get things put together this week. We seem to have gotten worse at this in a week. This is Emmanuel, joined tonight by Kyle. And I think Alex, are you there?
I am indeed.
Oh, good.
Can you guys hear me?
We hear you. Do you hear us?
I do indeed.
All right. We're trying to get Rob and Gila on, but for some reason... we can hear them, but they can't hear us, and I don't know why that is.
We can hear you now.
Wait, where'd you come from?
Wait.
How did we even connect to them again? We disconnected them. They reconnected somehow? Okay, fine. You can hear us.
Yeah,
yes.
Well, we were connected to all together before, but Rob couldn't hear us. Then I think you tried to disconnect just Rob, but you wound up disconnecting everybody. And then when you reconnected the call, somehow magically, we can all hear each other.
That is weird. So we must have had a bad circuit or something on Skype. That's the only explanation I can think of. How are you guys doing this week?
We're well. Thank you for asking.
Yeah.
I want more detail than that. Come on. It's been one hell of a week.
Alex?
Sure. I'll go first on that one. I'll put it this way. For the last 2 weeks, I have... You know, I've been struggling with potential symptoms of the coronavirus, and the last two shows I've had a cup of hot tea next to me. I feel so much better this week. I have a pint of Guinness next to me right now. So that's, you know, one way of gauging relative health, whether you're drinking tea or Guinness. Although, you know, the old ads for Guinness did say Guinness makes you get. What's going on, E? Oh. So I'm doing much better. And, you know, I did have a bit of a relapse last Friday as well, which happened the previous Friday, where I had a spike in a fever all of a sudden and a sort of massive headache that went along with it. But I just took it easy on Saturday. The fever broke. And I feel great now. And I'm at the point where, you know, I really think I can be reunited with my wife and my kids, I think, pretty soon. Now that this is all over, I still don't have an answer one way or the other as to whether or not I did, in fact, have the coronavirus. I certainly had many symptoms of it. But because my symptoms weren't severe enough to warrant getting tested, I just don't know. I think it's possible I could get tested now after the fact to identify the presence of antibodies, as some of our listeners have wrote in, too, with some offers for help, and that's very kind of them. And I think that's something I need to look into, is to this sort of post-hoc testing. And at this point, it sounds weird to say, but I hope that I did have the coronavirus, and I hope that it was something that presented itself mildly, symptomatically, because if that is the case, then I'll have some strong antibodies that can hopefully help protect me against this in the future, and that might be valuable to others as well.
Yeah, I mean, living through the virus basically gives you a superpower now, right? You can basically go frolic and romp out in the world without worry, I think, right? Is that how that works?
I can start licking the subway poles again. That was the hardest thing to give up, right?
Wow.
I'm nodding like you can see us.
Yeah, but
I keep forgetting. I'm sorry.
Well, this is radio. Don't forget, this is radio. Yes. Nobody else can see you.
Trying to remember.
Yes. And you've also got Guinness, which is something you're definitely not allowed to do in the studio. So, you know, we can take our advantages from doing this from our own various locations and go from there.
Alex, just take us back a little bit. When did this all begin, and how has your status changed from the beginning to now?
Yeah, well, it started about 2 weeks ago. Just maybe a little bit over 2 weeks ago when I had decided that I was going to leave the city and come out to our – we have a little weekend place out in the Poconos Mountains in Pennsylvania. You know, we're very lucky to have this kind of spot. And so I left about a day and a half ahead of my family. And the idea for me was to come out here, get the house ready, go back to Manhattan, pick up the wife and the kids, except the Sunday that I was here, ahead of the Monday, I was intending to come back to the city. I started to feel really sick. And then that next morning, I started running a fever. Had a bunch of body aches, fatigue, massive headaches, you know, a lot of pain behind my eyes as well, but no respiratory symptoms, thank God. But given that I had just come from the city, that I was on the subway recently, in fact, you know, it was just a couple of days before that we did our last in-studio show at WBII for Off the Hook. And then we went out to dinner after that, of course. And so that, you know, I've been in the office all over the city. The timing of it really and the symptoms made it seem like it could very well be the coronavirus. So since that time, I have actually been holed up here and isolated by myself at the house with nothing other than an aggressively affectionate beagle to keep me company. And my wife and kids wound up leaving the city as well. And thank God they are only about 45 minutes away over at my in-laws, also in Pennsylvania. This way, if there was any interstate travel ban, at least we'd still be in the same state. And they're staying with my in-laws who are, you know, in their 70s. And so it has been very important for me not to mingle with them. And then as a parent, especially a parent of two kids, one of whom is very young, you often dream about the ability to get away from your wife and kids for a couple of days. And now having been away from them for 2 weeks, I can tell you all you want to do is get back together with them. I miss my wife. I miss my kids with all of my heart. It breaks my heart to think that, you know, I haven't held or touched them in 2 weeks. And so in as much as you can dream about having a break as a parent, the circumstances under which you take that break really matter. And I just cannot wait to hold my children and kiss my wife again.
Yeah, that's unimaginable.
We totally get it. I mean, we haven't been dealing with our own illness, thankfully, but you know, we've been dealing with just people in our lives, both falling ill and people that we just have to worry about that we especially can't get anywhere near. We have friends who live in this apartment building with us that are just at particular risk. We haven't been able to go over, say hi, or do anything. It's this whole weird sense of, I mean, I really feel for you, Alex, because like you are going through this stuff without your family to hand, and Gila and I would probably both be going nuts if we weren't, you know, we didn't have each other in our shared home.
Anyway,
you know,
things here are getting a little, I don't know, we're getting ready for Passover, and this is a huge way that the virus and the lockdown have affected our family, both our little nuclear family here and also our extended family. We were supposed to be flying to Wisconsin next week to celebrate Passover with my family, with my mom and my brother and my sister-in-law. And I was going to be there for all of Passover. So all the stuff that needs to be done to get ready to celebrate Passover, we were not worrying about until like last week. So all of a sudden, there's stuff to prepare, and there's stuff to clean, and there's stuff to buy, and panic attacks to be had in the grocery store.
Yeah, for those unfamiliar, it's a very intensive preparation that goes into the whole thing.
So we were at the grocery store last night getting essentials, and a woman yelled at me for not wearing a face mask in the grocery store, and I cried in the grocery store. So that's how my week has been, crying in the grocery store.
Well, you know, this is really crazy because a couple of weeks ago we were being told not to wear masks. Now people are saying, oh, maybe you should wear masks. We're being told one thing differently every single week. I can see the argument for both sides. If you're sick, you shouldn't be out at all. But if you don't know you're sick, then maybe you should be wearing a mask. However, we've been told almost repeatedly for the last few months that people who aren't sick shouldn't wear masks. So it's you can be forgiven for not knowing what the right thing to do is.
Yeah, and it's within the context of staying within that 6 foot range from someone. But what if you're in a circumstance where you cannot, like you're in public transportation or you're going about trying to survive, and you come into close proximity to someone, then that risk can compound. And so people are reconsidering the original advisory, which was mostly because supplies were lacking so much and it needed to be available for healthcare workers and people that are really dealing with very, very ill people.
But in any event, it's unforgivable to yell at somebody like that. And I think what you're seeing are people reacting out of fear and lashing out. It's strange, you know, out here on Long Island, it's been pretty calm. At least the places we've gone has been pretty calm. How many times have you been to a supermarket, Kyle? Like maybe three or four times? And people have been, you know, there have been things, you know, available, not toilet paper, okay.
I noticed this week barriers are really popular. A lot of retail places are putting up like Lexan or plexiglass or polycarbonate.
Right.
Protectors or like things to either protect the employees or customers or vice versa, I guess, just basically having that clear window there for like high traffic areas
between you and the cashier. Yeah, but you know what I've noticed, well, we tend to go later in the day so that there's less people there, and there really are less people. We went to a supermarket last week. There was only one other person in the entire place, and this is a big supermarket, and we were aware of each other's existence and keeping our distance. But you know, in I don't want to say in a pleasant way, but not in a hostile way. Everybody's just aware of what's going on, and we know the rules. We know what's safe and what's not safe. And I think people are trying at least to be calm. And you just you find these little acts of kindness every now and then. I just tweeted this, and Gila, you might appreciate this. I got a huge box. I think five pound box of matzos for free at Stop and Shop. That's not an advertisement, but I don't know. They had some kind of weird. I don't know if they're trying to deplete the supply, because they had a lot of them. And it's basically, if you have that card that you can just say you forgot, it's free. It just says it in big letters. And I couldn't believe it. And now we have a year's supply, I think.
Yes, lots of correct.
So I will say that I am envious, but also in an interesting manner of speaking, sometimes you see the 5 pound boxes. We're really getting in the weeds in here, and I apologize. 5 pound boxes of matzah, you'll see. Kind of, there's either they're gouging prices on that, or they are loss leaders. And it's like, if you get, you know, $30, $50, $100 of whatever, we'll kick in 5 pounds of matzah for free. Matzah is often a loss leader for Passover groceries. It's fascinating.
Well, yeah, I think it's a loss leader this time, if that's the phrase, because they're really trying to get rid of it.
Yeah, there's really odd deals. We've noticed other places that had like a whole lot of one particular type of hand soap, and it just filled the entire like aisle. There was no other choice, just a lot of these neatly arranged hand soap bottles.
It was from Turkey, right?
Yeah, it was Turkish.
Turkish hand soap, and that's all they had. And they spread it so that they had basically one, and then next to it another one, and there's room for 20 behind it, but they only had the one. But they made it spread throughout the whole aisle, and since we were the only one of two people in there, or one of three people in there, it looked like they had a lot more than they actually did.
Could you remind us of where that was? Because I think Kyle came in a little muffled up at the outset.
It's just another retail grocery store.
My goodness, yeah. It's incredible.
There's other things. Go ahead.
I was about to say, I on the other hand, haven't had any experiences like that, because I have just been by myself indoors without – I literally have been going days and days without seeing any people. You know, there's a little beach area down, you know, where I'm walking the dog. We're lucky enough to live near a lake right here. And the other day I went over there and the police were hanging out at the beach area. And as they saw me coming in with the keffiyeh essentially over my face, you know, trying to, in case I coughed or anything, they just took that as their sign to leave. And then we had the whole area to ourselves.
Wow. You figured out how to make cops flee.
Yeah, I love the idea of just, you know, the sight of me makes police leave. And I guess you can do that now. If you just put like a little keffiyeh or kind of Middle Eastern looking scarf over your face, it's kind of scary looking, especially if you have a beagle with you. Cops just leave you alone at that point.
Well, it's scary looking if you don't know anything about people, but yeah. Wow. Okay, that's interesting. Well, now let me just ask the question: where do you think we are as a society right now, as opposed to a week ago? Have we Have we made advances? I've been hearing that there's progress, that the social distancing or physical distancing seems to be having an effect, that numbers aren't going up as fast as they were before, or as much as had been feared. There are companies that are tracking people on thermometers that check in with temperatures from around the country. So I think there is a bit of hope on that front, but then we've also heard that a good death toll, something that Trump thinks would be a success, is up to 240,000 people dead in this country alone, which I still have not processed. I can't get my head around that. Even if you look at the so-called Spanish flu from 1918 through 1920, I think the total number of people in this country that died was something like 600,000. And that was something that we thought would never happen again in this country. To say that we're up in the triple digits of thousands again is just staggering. And, of course, we've also heard people say the numbers could be up to 2.5 million. And at that point, you know, it becomes hard to even figure out what that means in your head. It's just the numbers get so huge and so shocking.
Yeah, at a certain point, the numbers like stop meaning anything to a human brain, and we're just coming up on that. And watching the where things are trending, like maybe things are slowing down now. Other people are saying that we're looking for things to trend upward again in another week or so, based on the whole cycle of how this thing works. And I think where we are as a society, I mean, we were out today picking up some things from the local shops and, you know, a chain drugstore and things in the neighborhood. And just people seem to be just a little, you know, I won't say a little, a lot more on edge than they were last week. There are a lot more masks out there. And there are a lot of people who are now starting to, I think, do a double take and back away a little if they see you not wearing a mask. Which is interesting. So while we're out there running errands, we kind of cut a line through the crowd as we were going around without masks in public. But that's the way of things right now. And I think by and large, barring a few exceptions, I think people are just knuckling down and kind of doing what they have to right now and still keeping their cool for the most part.
Yeah. I mean, I tend to agree with that, and to go back to Emmanuel's original question about those statistics, I think you're absolutely right, Rob. It's very difficult for the human mind to grapple with those types of numbers, and those are high numbers, and to know that those numbers represent human lives is an incredible thing, and it's also extraordinarily terrifying, and I think it's very hard to just process all of this on a daily basis because it's so overwhelming. I mean, you wake up to it, you go to sleep to it. I think it's very important for people's mental well-being and their overall health of their psyche is to try to distance yourself from this as much as you can during the day and to try to limit your intake of this horrible news. To maybe an hour or something per day. I really feel like it's very, very difficult for us to process that, and that the social distancing and the isolation that we are experiencing is exacerbated by this horrendous news that we are constantly being bombarded with over and over and over again, literally minute by minute during the day. And so we need these welcome distractions. We need the outlets for us to put our efforts and minds into something positive. And I think a lot of us are trying to do that on social media and even places like LinkedIn offering some welcome distractions. But what I will say is, as a society, what I am really given tremendous heart about is the ability to which we have rallied around these essential and critical healthcare workers, to see doctors, nurses, nurse practitioners, any kind of medical professional from all around the country coming into New York and really stepping up and doing this job is absolutely incredible. And, I think, you know, that's something we can all be very proud of.
Absolutely. Can I just say, okay, we're trying to figure out what that noise is. Now, who's making that noise? Fess up, whoever you are.
We're hearing it. It's coming from one of you guys.
Well, it's not coming from us because our mic is down, so it's one of you guys. So let's figure this out. We're hackers. We should be able to do this. I noticed the noise has stopped. Yeah, so the noise stopped now. So whatever one of you was doing, you stopped doing it. So what could that have been? Yeah, quiet is.
It was a noise like something dragging.
Yeah, so who is dragging something?
Not I, should lie.
It's not me.
I don't think it was me.
We're going to figure out who it was, folks. We're going to figure that out because, I'm very impatient with new technology giving me all these compromises in quality.
Yeah, we're not trying to have the blooper reel of how not to do radio, okay? This is a radio show. We're talking about what's going on right now. Everyone's on lockdown. Everyone is making terrible Skype calls. So we're going to make this a nice Skype
call. Yeah, and we're on really short fuses here, too. So let's just remind people of that. All right, Rob, I believe you were saying something.
Yeah, to the point of like where we are versus last week, too, I think another thing that's really come into focus for a lot of people is this is a whole nother week for people to experience the virus, if not firsthand, then in their immediate sphere. Like maybe a week ago, it was more of a thing that was out there somewhere, that was a distant thought. But like I know in the past week, we've known people who have fallen ill. We've known of a couple of fatalities now in our various social circles, families. And so I think people this week are much more likely to have felt the actual sting of this crisis versus a week ago when it might have been more of a thing that was just like out in the world somewhere, but didn't affect them yet.
Yeah, that proximity is something we all need to realize when we talk about these higher numbers, like millions of people perishing from this particular microbe.
Yeah, think about it. It's, 4,000 now? And we're talking, it could go up to a couple of million, or if we're lucky, just over 100,000, 200,000. So, yes, if you don't know somebody now, or if you're not directly affected by this, that's going to change for sure.
Absolutely. There's just mathematically no way around that. If you're not going to get sick, someone you're close to will. That's just what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So let's not detract from the seriousness of the situation. But at the same time, we need to stay sane. We need to keep our sense of humor. A lot of people have been doing really good things inside, creating all sorts of different ways with music, video, writing, and just reaching out to other people. That's what we need to continue to do because... You know, like we've been saying from the beginning of this nightmare, we're all in it together, and we are. It's not just happening in this this city, in this state, even in this country. It's happening all around the world. We're all going through this. Yeah, there are some places like Brazil and Belarus and Florida where they try to deny that this is happening, and that's a tragedy and it's an outrage, and hopefully people will correct them and make sure we all get through this, because it's the community action that makes all the difference, and that is why we've seen some changes. That's why some parts of the world have seen marked declines. The crisis is far from over, but that is something that that deserves note. But you know, when we say we're all in this together, I want to make sure people know to include their landlords in that, because they should not be left out of the community feeling of all of us making sacrifices. So if you have a landlord, be nice to them and tell them that you can't pay the rent this month because you're not getting any income this month. I don't see why that's a hard thing to understand, and why there's a particular group of people that expect to get 100% of what they're owed while everybody else has to bear with all this hardship. If we're all going to bear with hardship, then we're all in it together. We all must make these sacrifices. Right now, we are on pause, and that means not paying the rent. If you're not getting income, if you've lost your job, you can't continue paying for things that you can no longer afford through no fault of your own. Everybody needs to understand that right now. We are on pause. We are going to figure out how to get out of this together, and the moment we start saying, you've got to take care of this, and we're not going to take care of it. It's all going to fall on you and not us. That is when we start having major, major problems. So I hope we're able to keep the community feeling together. Know that we're all hurting. We're all suffering. Don't expect 100% from anybody because you're not going to get it. And if you're hurting, know that you're not alone. Know that we are going to have your back one way or another, and we all have to stand up for each other. I really hope that resonates.
Yeah, and to that point, you know, with respect to the withholding of rent, I think it's important to note that from a legal perspective, if you don't pay your rent, a landlord can try to evict you. But it's not your landlord that can evict you. The landlord cannot do it without the assistance of the court. The court is the only entity that can evict a tenant. And that means that the landlord would have to make an application to evict you to a court. And a judge will have to rule on that. And that's going to take a long time. That takes a long time. And you can really gum up the works on an eviction proceeding, even when we're not in the throes of an hysterical pandemic affecting the entire world and peaking in the city of New York. So just something to bear in mind, that your landlord can call you and send you nasty and threatening letters, but he cannot evict you without the court.
And if I could just step in and just observe from my hacker perspective, it seems when you talk, Alex, that's when that mystery noise returns. Now, what could be causing that?
Seriously? There's literally no noise here. I mean, maybe it's just some ambient noise or just perhaps the microphone.
Are you waving a flag whenever you speak or something? What does it sound like to you, Kyle?
It sounds like a snoring beagle.
Do you have a dog that falls asleep when you talk?
You know, weirdly enough, Kyle, there is a snoring beagle right next to me, but I don't think she's snoring that loud.
You're the only one with a snoring beagle of all of us, so I think you've moved to the top of the suspect list now.
He literally, you can't even see that in the video, but Kyle, you got that exactly right. There is a snoring beagle literally about 2 feet to my right.
All right.
Noted. In fact, I will show you guys. I don't know if you can see that.
Well, that's not going to do much for our radio listeners.
Yeah, nobody's here for the video.
Wow. Yeah, she's fit for radio just like me. But, yeah, I don't know. I'll go on mute when I'm not talking.
By the way, we are going to try something new tonight in just a little bit. We're going to try to take phone calls. Yeah, we're actually going to try to do this. It's probably going to be a disaster. Please bear with us. It's possible that some of us might not be able to hear the callers. But we have tested it out, and it does work theoretically. So we'll at least try to do that. We'll give the number out later. It's not the same number, so don't call that one. But first, a couple of stories, because I think it's important to continue keeping up to date with the news. And the news is interesting in many, many ways. Now, we all have heard about the ventilator shortage and the crisis that we're all facing from having so few of them. Story that was on Vice really caught my attention. As hospitals face the prospect of a critical ventilator shortage caused by the worst public health crisis in a century, they face another problem. I think we all know what it is: not being able to repair the ventilators that they do have. And that's because, like John Deere and Apple and so many other electronics companies, the major device manufacturers have spent the last several years cementing a repair monopoly. They've done this by lobbying against legislation that would make it easier to repair machines, keeping access to repair guides out of the hands of independent repair professionals, and using software controls to limit who can perform repairs. Now, Trump has said that states are more or less on their own when it comes to securing devices like ventilators, which are necessary to treat people with critical cases of COVID-19. Try getting it yourselves, Trump recently said. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, meanwhile, said that the state is struggling to create enough ICU beds for the expected number of people who will be sick, and getting enough ventilators remains the challenge, and the numbers are daunting. You can't find a ventilator for sale. We're looking desperately. And core to the fight against coronavirus, then, will be keeping the ventilators hospitals do have online. Many of them are not empowered to fix their own machines, because of the exact same issue outlined with John Deere tractors and other devices. Medical devices, including ventilators, have gotten more complicated over the years. They are now controlled by microprocessors and software. Now, that complexity hasn't made them more difficult to repair, but manufacturers have artificially put software locks on them, meaning that only those who are authorized can make modifications. We have talked about this so many times in the past with regards to software, DVD players, automobiles, and now we're seeing this attitude literally costing lives. I think it should be a crime to have a software, an artificial software lock that prevents anyone from being able to repair something as critical as a ventilator. Now, I know you guys out there have some strong thoughts on this.
Absolutely. I mean, the right to repair thing is something that's been very important to us, and we've spoken about it a lot on this program. And I hate that it's taking this pandemic, this global crisis, to sort of actually show the results of, like, the things that we've been saying all this time could be prevented if we all had the right to repair our devices are now obvious, because actual lives are being put at risk and possibly lost because a hospital can't fix their own machine. And I think after this all settles down, you know, however long that takes, there's going to be a lot of going back over what could have happened in a better way, what didn't need to happen, how many people didn't need to die. There's going to be a reckoning after this. And I think right to repair is something that's very obviously a factor here, and that that needs fixing. And now we can show people, look what happened because we didn't fix this.
People need to train too. I mean, to be able to use them, and that knowledge being kept on on a very high shelf that, you know, proverbially like out of reach to the average person, is really not using the technology in as positive a regard as like other really complex life-saving devices like AEDs. Which are used in conjunction with CPR for heart attacks. Imagine if their interests were in having the average person be able to operate something and, you know, reducing the barrier to entry as opposed to guarding it and hiking up these incredible costs to having the hardware, maintaining the hardware in so far as parts go, and sharing the knowledge for someone who's going to be doing service, but also like training. I mean, we should be training people just like we would with an AED on that scale if it's actually going to be something that we're ramping up and using and maintaining, because there's going to be a lot of them, it sounds like, I hope.
Yeah, and you know, and to that point too, I think, you know, this whole right to repair, what companies have done with these particular types of software locks are obviously they're all designed to protect and really overprotect a company's intellectual property. And I think, you know, a lot can be done right now legislatively with respect to this. I mean, the president can come down.
Muted. And so if you need to mute it and then.
Yeah, Rob, we can hear you.
Yeah, I don't think you were muted there for a second.
Okay, maybe it's not.
Might I recommend telekinesis?
We just haven't considered magic enough.
Uh-huh. Go ahead. Well, anyway, as you're saying, Alex.
Yeah, the point I was trying to make before, I was so rudely interrupted by Rob T. Firefly's lack of or failure to use the mute button like a reasonable human being, was that if it is the case, so let's say that you know, these companies just remove all of these particular locks, right? I mean, there is a lot that we can do legislatively. Congress can act, and state legislators can act and say, look, that does not equate to a waiver of your rights to your intellectual property. So there are some things that, God forbid, our politicians can do and step up and make an effort and say to these companies, this is completely unacceptable. We're going to allow you a limited time to remove all of these barriers, remove all of these locks, and still have some legal protection with respect to the intellectual property that you were trying to save, you know, through all of these ridiculous hardware and software locks, because what we're talking about right now is saving lives. And intellectual property rights should always yield to saving lives. It's not a very difficult thing to consider. it shouldn't be hard for any human being to consider. I mean, look, you know, if we want to get philosophical about this, right? I mean, not everything that is legal is moral, and not everything that is illegal is immoral. And sometimes transgressing and stepping on others' intellectual property rights, if they can save goddamn lives, is the moral thing to do, even if it happens to be illegal.
And that goes also in the same respect that it has been sort of half-measured. A lot of the right to repair was sort of put in. I think they had the Library of Congress that was National Archives librarian or something, or Copyright Office librarian that would approve for a certain amount of time certain abilities to reverse engineer hardware and other software measures, and then it gets challenged again, it goes back. It's not really just even about that, though, now, because this is an emergency. So, yeah, great. If you want to make money on a certain particular proprietary thing that you developed and someone sells an identical clone of it, yeah, under normal circumstances, maybe there would be an argument that you should be compensated or they should contact you as they're creating a derivative or identical product. I mean, they should license in some way. But even that, we've talked about many times as being wholly broken. So just in this specific thing, and especially under this sort of circumstance, for someone to make a legal argument and challenge a third party that's trying to repair something for a rural hospital or somewhere in this particular moment just seems like such a really cold way to go about making money right now.
Yeah, and this whole thing comes from a company that basically the idea that a company could basically create a new revenue stream for itself that it wasn't entitled to before. I mean, it used to be that when you sold something to somebody, that was it. That's where you made your money. But if you could sell something to somebody and then have them keep paying you for some reason, that's just magicking new money out of thin air, and that's what they've done here, and everyone's been okay with it by and large, and that's crap. I mean,
yeah,
we're now seeing a case. Gila brings up these stories about a company called Medtronic, which has done the opposite and is basically open sourcing their ventilator, publishing the plans, publishing the manuals, and everything, and enabling people to repair the ventilators that they have that were made by this company, which is, you know, that's handy.
Well, has anyone figured out?
Are out there now.
Has anyone figured out a way to defeat the security that is preventing people from repairing these ventilators?
That's a very interesting question, and we would definitely love to hear it. If you know of any such things that have happened, have people been able to root their ventilators
I would gleefully risk another lawsuit publicizing that information, because that really needs to get out quickly.
And also, I mean, just we've talked about ventilators so much in the last couple of weeks. I mean, it is certainly, as I would just say, it's not business as usual, and this goes right along with rent. It's not business as usual. But since we've talked about ventilators so much in the last couple of weeks, I'm just curious, has anybody ever taken one apart? Like, someone should take one apart. How do they work? I mean,
don't take it apart right now, because need them.
It might be a little difficult to do right now.
No, I'm not doing anything. Right. You guys go ahead.
But maybe look at a schematic or something, or a manual, and let's figure this out and figure out ways around ridiculous and criminal actions like these.
But the more manufacturers that open that up, I mean, the more really, really smart people can look at it, and the more of the actual need can be met because people are taking a really hard look at this stuff and not treating it as something that should only be for a limited insular group of people.
Okay, folks, you feel like you want to maybe try this experiment now with the telephones?
Yeah, we could. I'd like to make one point in response before we do it, though. I will say I would like to just say that I do know somebody very well who would be able to answer the question of have you taken apart a ventilator, and it's somebody about whom I'm extraordinarily proud, and it's my sister-in-law. She is an anesthesiologist working in the city tirelessly almost every single day dealing with coronavirus patients and dealing with inadequate personal protective equipment and putting her life on the line every single day that she stays in the city and continues to treat these patients and intubate them and work with the ventilators and do the job and I think respond to the calling. So, yeah, maybe at some point we could think about having her on the show and talking about how ventilators work.
Most definitely. Absolutely. Give the keynote address if we ever have a hope. That would be that would be something. It's changing everything. It's changing everybody, and I'm blown away by the courage that I'm seeing on so many fronts. Okay, so this is how we have it set up right now. We have a phone line that will forward to us out here. We don't know if you guys, we didn't have a chance to test this before the show, but we don't know if you guys are going to be able to hear the phone call. So if you're not able to hear the phone call, after your initial outrage at that, maybe you could let the people talk. And I don't know if you can hear them either. We'll find that out. This is all part of an experiment, and we'll make it better. We'll keep making it better as we go along. For those of you calling, and I'm going to give you the phone number in just a second, but just so you know, for those of you calling, I'm not sure if more than one person can get through at once. I'm also not sure what happens to people who were not able to answer the phone for. You might get a generic 2600 recording. You might get some other recording. You might get a fast, busy signal. That's what I get when I try it. But it's all an experiment. Somebody will make it through to the air and be able to talk on the radio. That is the thrill. So we'll see how well it works. The phone number, are you ready? The phone number is area code. You'll like this, Alex. Area code 802.
802?
Yes, that's in Vermont.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, we had to search long and hard for this one. 802. We're not actually in Vermont, but we're close. 802-321-HACK. That's 802-321-4225. And we're going to see if we get a phone call come in. And if we do get a phone call, we're going to pick it up and put it over the radio. And we are getting a phone call. Wait, it's a phone call coming. Wait, that's not you, Alex, is it? Good evening.
Maybe, I don't know.
Did you call the show? You have a phone in your hand.
I do.
Well, I guess this is a good way as any to test and see if anybody else can hear you. Rob, can you hear? You're going to hear him anyway with all the Skype, so that doesn't prove anything.
Yes.
Alex, I'm hanging up on you. And I can do that. No, I hung up on you. You're still here on Skype, though, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
So I'm sorry, anybody else who tried calling just now. 802-321-HACK is our temporary phone number just for this show. It won't work for any other show. And we'd like to know, at least we know the phone number works, if any listener out there would like to be on the radio. This is how you do it. 802-321-4225. We don't know how well it'll work. It might not go through.
I had an idea. I can mute my microphone and call back if we want to try it.
Yeah, let's give someone else a chance to actually use the phone number.
All right.
We spent all day setting this thing up, and I don't know if it's.
Kidding.
Yeah, we're seeing lights flashing in other places, but it's not going there. It's not the best system in the world, and there are other problems with it. While we're waiting for that phone call, though, any other updates people want to give? Again, 802-321-4225 is our phone number.
Quick one is that today, despite everything, is April 1st, and it's still Census Day. So if you have not filled out your census form, take 2 minutes online and do that. Really important to make sure we all get represented in our country and in our local governments, especially at this time when everybody's voice needs to be heard.
Can I just say that Gila, you're mistaken. It's actually April 2nd.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, that was my April Fool's, my very scaled down April Fool's joke for today.
I totally went for it, though, Emmanuel.
That's the joke.
I believed you.
I'm done. Nobody else has to worry about anything.
I thought we weren't doing this.
No, well, we did. Okay, so I don't know if people are afraid to call Vermont or if it's not working for some reason. Like I said, I got a fast busy when I try calling it. I don't know why, but I do know other people have been able to reach us. And this is an opportunity to call into the radio show and tell us how you're doing with the crisis and any other information you might want to spread. 802-321-4225. And if it's not working... are you guys monitoring anything that people might be able to update? Twitter, email?
We're keeping an eye out on Twitter and on Mastodon and on email. And people definitely heard Rob getting scolded about the mute button. We're getting a lot of feedback on that.
Okay, so how can people tell us if they're not getting through on the phone?
Well, if you're not getting through on the phone but you have Twitter, tweet at us at Hacker Radio Show, or even send us an email, oth@2600.com, and we will keep an eye on that. Let us know what you're hearing, what you're not hearing, and we'll go from there. We're all figuring this out on the fly, thank you all out there for bearing with us.
No, Rob, we figured it out. Just email us about the show, about ventilators and right to repair and any other thing you're observing. I mean, of course, if there's a technical thing, I'm sure.
Of course.
Of course. We are happy to hear from you in any way possible. But, try going old school.
I don't know. We're getting all kinds of voicemails now. I see this coming in. People are trying to reach us. I don't know why it's not ringing. Thank you, Google. We depend on you once, and you can't make a phone ring. We set all this up. Alex, you broke it. I don't know what you did. Did you hang up? Are you still connected somehow?
No, I'm going to try to ring it one more time.
Why will you try to ring it again, for God's sake?
There's more competition now.
You're the only person that's gotten through.
Should I try or not? Do you want me to try?
All right, try. Let's see if for some reason you have the golden touch. And tell us what you get when you try.
All right, hold on a second. Now, there's some more intel from this. Ready?
Go ahead.
Hold up. Let's see.
Only on for a couple more minutes, so please share the information.
It said that the Google subscriber we are calling is not available.
Whoa, isn't that a kick in the pants? How are we not available? We're taking phone calls right now.
Yeah.
Okay, well, folks, you know, it's like we said, it's going to be sloppy. We just thought that the technology would work a little bit better. There's nobody else using the phone, so I don't know why it's not ringing through. We tested this earlier today.
Disconnected.
And, you know, it's a shame that you got through the first time, and that was it. Nobody else seems to be able to do that.
I totally agree. I mean, I didn't think it was going to be, you know, like a, you know, one-hit wonder type thing here, you know.
Yeah, you get one call. That's it. We have a phone call. Please, nobody touch anything. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Can you hear us?
I can't believe I got through like after about 10 tries.
I'm so sorry. Now you're able to hear me, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Alex, can you say something, Alex? Can you say something to them? And can you hear them?
I can't hear them.
I heard two people so far.
Okay, so Alex, say something else?
Something else?
Okay,
you
guys just going to have to back away from the conversation for a moment while we talk to the caller.
Yeah, or relay something to us, and we can ask the caller for the...
Yeah, I'm sorry, we didn't have a chance to test this before. So, caller, what's on your mind?
Okay, so I wanted to mention something about masks. I also have seen more people wearing them, but people are using them incorrectly because they're fiddling with them a lot, and in the process, they're touching their face a lot. Like, I've seen people, like, when they're driving around or walking around not near other people, they have the mask pulled down under their chin, and then when they get out, like, they're using it like a dust mask, you know, like when they get out and they're going to be near people, they pull it back over their face. And I think the right way to wear a mask is you have to wash your hands before you put it on and then not touch your face or the mask until you're ready to take it off. And even if that's at the end of the day, and then you have to wash your hands before you take it off. Plus, I've also seen people today for the first time wearing cloth masks. In fact, some of them are even fashion statements with faces drawn on them and stuff. And I hope they realize that when they take that mask off at night, they have to wash it before they use it again.
Yeah, those are some really incredible comments. There's been a lot of people sharing designs and doing a lot of DIY surgical masks. And I think part of it is that in some of the healthcare settings, healthcare workers are trying to extend the life of the disposable N95s by putting on something that is washable. But you're so spot on about contaminating the mask itself, because if you pull it up onto your, like, hat, you know, as you're about to talk to somebody or something, and thinking you're going to put it back down on your face, if you've been somewhere where these droplets, the so-called droplets, are, that could be brought down right to your face, and then you're trusting that this thing on the inside of it is protecting you when it isn't.
Exactly. But even just touching your face to adjust your mask, like I saw a guy today in the store, he pulled his mask down so that he could talk on his phone, and then he pushed the mask back up. Now, each time he did that, he was touching his face. And the primary precautions are to wash your hands and not to touch your face. So by using a mask incorrectly, you're really... In some ways, you could be putting yourself at greater risk.
That is a very very good tip for people to take into consideration. This is all new for so many of us. So if you are wearing a mask, it is important to know how to wear a mask. And yes, as the caller said, you could be putting yourself in more danger if you do it improperly than if you don't wear a mask at all, something that a lot of us probably never even considered. Thank you so much for that phone call, and I hope you're doing well.
Okay, you're welcome.
All right, take care.
Okay.
Well, that sounded good. I'm sorry, folks, our Skype people, you couldn't hear that. But you can always turn on the stream, and it's going to be delayed, but you'll be able to hear. We're going to take another phone call, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Okay, excellent. The radio's in the other room. It's not interfering, is it? Because I'm running in and turning it off.
No, but may I ask our Skype people to please mute their room noise? That would make it sound a lot better. Thank you. Go ahead, caller.
Okay, so yeah, I'm going to talk to you while I'm doing it because I'm running in, because I know sometimes you're in the next room, it doesn't matter. But let me just shut it off.
It does now.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Good. All right. So I have two things. Yeah, so just so you know, that some feedback. I was trying to... I'm getting in touch with y'all for a while. I called about 12 times. I left about 5 or 6 messages, and that was just so that I see you trying to work out the system, and that way I was giving you feedback as I was just listening live. So that maybe, like, I don't know how long you're going to have to use this system, but at least maybe by next week or whatever, you'll have the kinks out. So I was just trying to do that, and I'm glad I got through. So what I wanted to, this is Jay from Harlem. And
you have about a minute, so... Go ahead. Yeah. You have about a minute.
I just wanted to try to get a consumer's report. How do I do that? Went online. You know, they don't have the magazine anymore. It was simple before. And I liked them because they were pretty honest, and you can, besides calling and asking you guys questions, but I can always go to them and get some a good comparison of different electronics and things and computer things. So I'm just thinking that when I went online, it was really difficult. They try to push you towards doing it electronically, and I don't want to do that. So is there a way you can advise me or help me in order to be able to get a Consumer's Digest magazine?
Well, I mean...
It's just bad for my eyes. You get headaches.
Right. No, of course. As a magazine publisher, of course, I understand the value of getting something on paper. I would simply contact them directly, find out where they are published from, call them and ask them, how do I get your magazine? Where can I get your magazine? Obviously, it's going to be difficult now with bookstores being closed, but I think that's really the best way. I wish I could spend more time on this, but we are running out of time. We just have to say goodbye to other people. But thanks for calling, and keep us updated on this, because you definitely should be able to get what you want. Thank you. That's the last phone call. We're going to take Skype people. Come back, please. You there?
We're here.
We're okay. Here.
Yeah, we're pretty much out of time, but we do have an important announcement. Actually, I think, Rob, you have an important announcement. Oh, and how do we turn this off now? Oh, my God.
That is going to be annoying. Well, it's just that... this Friday would be 2600 meeting day all over the world. But of course, nobody's going to meetings. But a lot of 2600 meetings, including New York's, are going virtual. So at nyc2600.net, the site for the New York meetings, take a look at that around Friday. And there will be a link to the conference you can join and be part of the virtual New York City 2600 meeting. If you're in other areas, look at the social media and websites and stuff for your local meeting and see if something similar is going on.
Yes, it's it pains us to have to cancel all the meetings, and all the meetings are canceled. I don't care where you are. If you're in a place that's never heard of coronavirus, it is still dangerous for you to be outside and to be congregating with people. We are not going to contribute to that. So we need to do this collectively. We need to do this as a group, and that is how we will get through it and emerge on the other side. We have some rather sad news, and we're going to be seeing a lot of this over, actually, for some reason, it's not coming up. Okay. We have some music here that's not coming up. Why is it not coming up, Kyle? It's on the computer, and the computer is here. What am I doing wrong? Okay. Always our the end of our show is always where things fall apart. That's what happened last week, and it's happening again this week. We are starting to lose people as a result of coronavirus. One of the people that we have lost is somebody that you're not hearing right now, unfortunately. Mano Dibango. Do you remember that song? Makuso by Mano Dibango. It was a big hit when I was a kid in the 1970s. And I wish we could hear it now. It's an amazing song. And my computer says it's playing. So if you're not hearing it, that's your fault, apparently. Yeah. You guys don't hear it, do you? I don't hear it.
No, we don't hear it on this side, fortunately. I wish we could.
Okay, for some reason it's saying it's muted. And, well, you know what? We're out of time. You know, folks, look it up. We'll figure this out. We'll figure out what's wrong with this computer, why it's muting things without unmuting them. And we'll be back next week. Thanks very much to Reggie over there in the studio. We hope to see you again someday. And we will be back again next week. OTH@2600.com is our email address. This is WBAI New York.
Hello, I am Sophia Albaiti, member and vice chair of the WBAI Local Station Board. WBAI's Local Station Board is the Pacifica Foundation Board responsible for local management and operations. The next meeting of the Local Station Board will be Wednesday, April 8th at 7 p.m. Because of coronavirus precautions and restrictions on gatherings, the meeting will be a remote access meeting which will be accessible to members of the public. It will include an opportunity for public comment. This will be the first Local Station Board meeting since the defeat of the proposed changes to the Pacifica Foundation bylaws, which means the Local Station Board will be discussing and getting reports about how normal governance and operations of Pacifica and its local stations can now resume unimpeded. This includes the recent seating of the previously elected Pacifica National Board members. The seating was abnormally delayed by those seeking the bylaws changes. Again, that's Wednesday, April 8th at 7 p.m. The meeting, held through the Zoom remote meeting service, again, that's Zoom, can be accessed by calling in the U.S. 929-205-6099 and entering the meeting ID 922-457-2995. That's telephone number 929-205-6099 and meeting ID 922-457-2995. A link to instructions, including for listening over the web and how to submit written comments, will be available through WBAI's main webpage. Do you have to contribute to WBAI to access the meeting? No. But why not?
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. The previous program was Off the Hook, heard Wednesdays at 7 p.m. It is now 8 p.m. Stay tuned for Exploration Without an S with Michio Kaku coming up.
Well, this is Dr. Michio Kaku, and this is a special edition of Exploration. Today, we're going to talk about something that's been on the minds of billions of people, and that is a tragedy called the coronavirus epidemic. Now, let me be clear about one point, and that is I am not a doctor. I do not have an MD degree. However, I do have a PhD in theoretical physics, and I'm very familiar with the computer modeling that's being done right now. Modeling that seems to indicate that we're very close to reaching the apex within 2 to 4 weeks, and we expect that perhaps 100,000 or up to maybe 240,000 Americans may perish just within the next few weeks. And so in this hour of exploration, we're going to talk about the science, not the therapies, not the day-to-day affairs of the coronavirus and the first responders, but the science behind the coronavirus. Now, one question that I often get on the Internet is, well, where did this thing come from? I mean, just a month ago, it was considered a blip on the radar screen, and now we're on lockdown over most of the country. The economy is in free fall. In fact, the entire world seems to be on lockdown just within the last month or 2 months. And the question is, where did it come from, and can it happen again? Well, first of all, we have to understand, where do diseases come from anyway? Roughly 60% or so of all diseases come from animals. That's right, animals. Because you figure that humans have only been around for 100,000, maybe 200,000 years, tops. But animals have been around for tens of millions of years, predating humans by a tremendous amount. Now, what's different? What's different about this is that because of modern technology, humans are expanding. Human settlements are now encroaching upon the ancient world of diseases. It turns out that many of the diseases we're going to talk about today are very old, ancient diseases, diseases that are much older than the human race. But for the most part, they infect just other animals. And these animals, in turn, eventually develop an immunity to these things over millions of years. And then two things happen. One, humans expand into their backyard. That's right, we are the invaders. We're the ones invading into the territory inhabited by these ancient diseases for millions of years. And two, a mutation occurs. A mutant germ jumps out that can infect not just other animals, but humans as well. Now, how do we know this? I mean, after all, this happens over centuries, the millennia. We know this because we can analyze the genetics now of these diseases. Take a look at the flu. Everyone's talking about the flu and comparing it with the coronavirus. But let's take a look at the flu. Where did the flu come from? We have many varieties. We have the Hong Kong flu, the Shanghai flu, the Beijing flu. And what you notice is that most of the flu viruses come from Asia. And if you then DNA sequence the RNA within the genome of these viruses, you find something interesting. For the most part, they come from birds. It is bird genetic material that is found in most of these flu viruses, with some genetic material from pigs and also some from humans. Now, why is that? You see, in Asia, there's something called polyfarming. Polyfarming is found not just in China, but throughout Asia, where peasants live in very close proximity to birds and pigs, and especially ducks. And a lot of the flu influenza genetics comes from birds and ducks. The pigs, in turn, eat the bird droppings, and we eat the pigs. And the pigs act like a mixing bowl of genetic material from birds, pigs, and some from humans. And so we realize that, once again, two factors lead to the development of these diseases. One, humans expand into the territory occupied by ancient animals, encountering diseases that are quite ancient. And second of all, mutations occur. Mutations occur which allow them to jump from animals to humans. In fact, there's one theory that says even HIV is a product of this transmutation. You see, if you look at the genetics of HIV, you realize that it is pretty new, but is part of a branch of an ancient disease called SIV. S for simian. That is, we're talking about monkeys and apes now. It's a very ancient disease. It's a disease which afflicted apes for millions of years, but eventually they develop immunity to it. Then human settlements start to encroach upon the territory of these apes. Humans eat the apes. They trade in ape meat. And as a consequence, one day, a mutation occurs. At least this is one theory that seems to correspond with the history of HIV and the genetic history of SIV. And then we can now answer the question, can it happen again? Well, the answer is obviously yes, it can happen again, because humans keep on expanding into the territory of these ancient viruses. Mutations occur. Of course, they don't occur all the time, but it takes some time, a few decades, to get a mutation that will make this virus hop from animals into humans, and there we go again. In other words, believe it or not, it's going to happen again. Now, take a look at what our grandparents had to go through in 1918. We forget that in 1918, we had something that killed more humans than World War I. That's right. This is the greatest killer in the history of the human race, and it is the Spanish flu virus. Believe it or not, it killed more humans than all of World War I. In fact, it was so devastating that it actually forced some of the countries involved in World War I to settle before the death became debilitating for the future of their countries. And so we see that throughout history, in fact, I'll mention this a little bit more later, throughout history, human history has in fact been shaped by plagues, black plagues. We forget this because we have modern medicine. We think that plagues are something that you read about in ancient history books, and then you realize, no, they're still there because animals still have these viruses. And then another question is, well, we talked about the flu. So then the question is, well, what is the difference between the flu and the coronavirus? I mean, aren't some flu viruses coronaviruses? Aren't they related to each other? And the answer is yes, but something caught scientists by surprise. When this thing originally happened, people thought it was similar to the flu, just like we had the Hong Kong flu, Shanghai flu, and whatever. So no big deal. But this is a different kind of animal. First of all, what kills you when you come down with the coronavirus? Now, believe it or not, the coronavirus itself does not kill you. I mean, after all, it's a molecule. It's not even alive. You can't even see it. So what actually kills you? Well, with the 1918 Spanish flu virus, we've actually sequenced it. Scientists went to the North Polar regions, dug up the bodies of people that died because of the 1918 flu, extracted enough genetic material to sequence it. In fact, on your cell phone, you can actually download the entire genome of the greatest killer in the history of the human race, the 1918 Spanish flu virus. And what they found was, well, why did it kill so rapidly? And why did it kill so many young people, unlike the coronavirus? Well, scientists were shocked to find that, well, first of all, of course, the virus itself did not kill you. It's a molecule. You can't even see this thing. But what happens is it stimulated the immune system to go into overdrive. And the immune system creates mucus and different kinds of fluids trying to kill the virus, and you drown. You drown in your own bodily fluids. In fact, that's one of the reasons why pneumonia kills you. Same thing there. The germs, they don't kill you directly, but in this case, it overstimulates the body's immune system to produce fluids and antibodies in a desperate attempt to kill the germs, and you literally drown in your fluids. And they found that the coronavirus is somewhat similar. And we'll talk a little bit more about this in another moment. So why is this spreading so fast, and how dangerous is it compared to the flu virus? Well, we now have some numbers to work with. When you see all these numbers on TV, you go blind. You go blind. What do these numbers mean? What numbers do I trust? The only number that I trust, when I see all these numbers flashed on the screen, the only number that I trust is the death count. Now, why is that? Because you don't really know how many people are afflicted by the virus. You don't know that. Many people are asymptomatic. They have no symptoms at all. They don't even know they're carriers of the germ. So what do you trust?